Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Job Growth, Energy, Affordability, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, January 24th. First order of business is approval of the minutes. Representative May Quaid moves approval of the minutes. Is there any corrections, discussions, or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. Members, we're doing base budget oversight and program outcomes today. First item we have on our agenda is the Department of Commerce. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Rothman, the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to present to the committee and get started here in the year. So in response to the request from the committee, we've pulled together some of the information and have a little presentation. Members, you have some of the materials that we passed out, and then I have a little, it'll be up here on the slide, presentation as well. Before I delve into the numbers, I thought I'd start at about 30, 50,000 feet. The Department of Commerce, as you know, has a broad oversight and jurisdiction over the Minnesota's economy. Our primary mission is to protect the public interest.
And that, Commissioner, I apologize to interrupt you, but I just want to point out to you and members of the committee, when you cross the chair, this is what happens to you right there. So just letting everyone know you see Representative Metz on the crutches. Well, you know.
That's only if you're weak.
Yeah, the Garofalo family has the Garofalo family has many friends, Representative Mahoney.
So. Mr. Chair, I will say I'm glad you took it out on me because it shows my district how hard I'm willing to fight for them.
All right. Commissioner, my apologies. I just could not miss that opportunity. So please continue with your testimony.
Not at all. Well, thank you. And then we advocate for Minnesota's consumers. I'll delve into that a little more. Ensure a strong and competitive and fair marketplace. This means economies, the sectors that we oversee and regulate. We strengthen Minnesota's economic future for all of us. And as our staff like to say, we serve as a trusted public resources for all of us throughout Minnesota. Our focus is to develop and make sure that Minnesota has a strong economy. Within the consumer protection area, we do a tremendous amount of work to protect Minnesota consumers from fraud, scams, you name it. We do a ton of that to protect Minnesotans. We also work very hard to make sure that we have a fair and balanced economy, competition, equity and fairness among all of our businesses that we oversee. We oversee right now more than 20 industries, everything from insurance, securities, banking. It includes energy, telecom, and many others. We are the licensing administrator for about 350,000 professionals and Minnesota businesses in Minnesota. That's everything from insurance companies, insurance agents, real estate agents, and a lot of folks throughout Minnesota's economy that depend upon our ability to make sure that their professions are properly licensed. We also advocate on behalf of the public utility and the public, excuse me, to keep utility rates low, reliable, and affordable for everyone. And we also have a large responsibility to deliver federal and state energy and telecommunications services to Greater Minnesota, the metro area, and basically from all four corners of the state. We had a lot of, Mr. Chair, a lot of slides in here talking about sort of an overview presentation. We've cut them down to facilitate your questions and your interest in focusing in on our base budget so that we could give you an overview of what that looks like. So, with that, why don't we just delve into some of the numbers here. On the fiscal year 16 and 17 revenue, we had a total amount of $577,958,000 for the biennium. Why don't I start sort of clockwise? I'll start with special revenue and go around. And the special revenue, the 91.3, representing about 16% of our budget. These are special revenue funds that, to sort of specify the major ones for you. One is the insurance fraud prevention account. The second is the auto theft prevention account. We also have funding in a special revenue fund for our siting and planning energy, large facility planning unit. And then we also get special revenue funds that support the staff that, do grid reliability administration. Think of the keeping the grid stabilized throughout our energy sector. Then jumping down to our federal revenue sources, these are, it's 43% of the total pie. These are lifeline funds for several of our programs. One is the low-income heating assistance, energy assistance program. The second is weatherization. A third is our rate review grant. And then another bucket, a smaller bucket, is energy grants. We have four energy grants in that bucket as well. Coming over to the general fund, the non-dedicated, these are general fund non-dedicated dollars that are raised, I suppose, in effect. There's $235 million, which is 41% of the revenue related to the Department of Commerce. In this bucket includes the licensing fees, unclaimed property fees, mutual fund fees, financial institutions assessment and energy assessment, telecom assessment. Fines and penalties is included in this, and as well weights and measures revenue source and funding. That's the big picture in terms of revenue. The next slide is to sort of preview the revenue in terms of the general fund revenue in comparison to the expenditures, and I'll get into that a little bit further. But what this slide shows is that the statutory general fund revenue is $234.4 million, and the general fund expenditures that we have are at $53 million. You can see that it's roughly about four times. We bring in roughly four times what we cost. Next is FY16-17 expenditures. Now, these expenditures are for all funds that the department has. And what we've done for FY16 and 17 is to collect the actuals for 16 and FY17 estimates. They're pretty accurate and close to where we are, actually being halfway through FY17 and all. So, again, clockwise, let's start at general fund expenditures, $53 million. This is 14% of the expenditures for the department. I'll talk and walk through in greater detail, split out that piece of pie for you in a couple charts. The next slice of the pie is special revenue. This is 70.8 million, or 18% of the expenditures, which relate back to what I had just talked about in terms of the special revenue page programs. This is the spending side of it. Same thing with the petrol fund. It's $16.5 million. And petrol fund, these are the services to help clean up the gas and petroleum leakage that's happening throughout the state. The workers' compensation little slice there is $1.5 million. That's it's going to be a little bit greater than zero, but it's the workers' compensation fund dollars that are spent on rate regulation for workers' compensation, and a portion of that is workers' compensation fraud investigations. So that's that little slice at that piece there. And the next is the federal fund, the larger slice of the pie. Again, these are the expenditures related to the federal fund programs that we get from the LIHEAP weatherization and those other funds. In the next slide, slide 7, we've set out a little bit deeper picture on the FY16-17 federal program funds. These are the expenditures, so these are relating back again to those to the revenues. So if you start on the energy assistance, again, the low-income heating assistance and weatherization, that's $228.6 million. This is the what we consider the lifeline funding that comes into the state of Minnesota to help people in their homes pay for their heating throughout the winters in Minnesota, as well as weatherization. So, for example, last year Minnesotans, we helped 340,000 Minnesotans keep heat on across the state of Minnesota.
With regards to that, the energy assistance program, because it's such a large portion of the federal expenditures, can you just elaborate for members of the committee on kind of the flow of the dollars? So obviously, they're federally sourced, but kind of talk about how it goes to the state of Minnesota and how it actually reaches out to citizens and how it actually helps them.
Delivery. So the state of Minnesota gets appropriations from the federal government that eventually get to your constituencies in your districts through the Department of Commerce. So, for example, this year we received a little over $100 million in our initial funding from the federal government for income heating assistance, and that's how you can get to about $200 million over the biennium, roughly. The dollars are administered through our staff. We have staff at the Department of Commerce that administer the program for the whole entire state, making sure that the dollars are accounted for, the dollars are spent and delivered to local communities. The dollars then flow to community action partnership agencies throughout the state of Minnesota, roughly 30 or so, throughout in all corners of the state, Duluth, northern Minnesota, southwestern Minnesota, all the way in, including the metropolitan area. Those programs then deliver, their applications come in and then take the grant funds and then deliver those resources to our communities throughout Minnesota. Similar process is used for the weatherization program, kind of a sister program to the low-income heating assistance program. They are separate dollars, separate funding. Generally, there's a relationship in a way sometimes with the administrative costs, but that's how those dollars are spent and delivered to the Minnesota communities.
So, Commissioner, when, for example, when a person has a need, whether they're in a rural area or an urban area, they need help with their heating, whether it's electricity, propane, natural gas bills, they don't call the Department of Commerce. Can you just kind of explain how they reach out or how those CAP agencies reach out to those customers and how the dollars then flow from the CAP agency to the actual provider of the energy?
Yeah. So, and it depends on the energy source, but an individual, a constituent, anybody in the state of Minnesota who's eligible, and think of people, the primary constituencies are low-income people, they're senior citizens, they're veterans, they're families with children who apply for these dollars. They can call either the Department of Commerce or Community Action program in your districts. We have a 1-800 number at the Department of Commerce, and then what we do is we'll link people up to the local provider depending upon where they live. The community action agencies have their own staff, so some of the dollars go for administration of the staffing there. But essentially, there is an application process that we supervise and administer. The community action agencies receive those applications from your constituents, and they're the ones that go through the approval process and then pay out the dollars to utility or propane provider directly. So, and then we monitor those dollar flows and how they're and making sure that they're getting to the right place over
so
a period of time.
So those individuals are applying things like income verification or residency checks. That's the responsibility of the Department of Commerce, or is it the responsibility of the individual community action agency?
The application process is housed at the community action agencies.
And so the residency and verification requirements are done on their side?
They should be done, but they're, you know, if it's a pick a constituent in your district, they make, should make sure that the address is in their area and all that.
Gotcha. Representative Anderson has a question.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. A couple of years back, I know you were working, Mr. Chair, when the price of propane spiked up to $4 or $5 a gallon, about getting some of these federal dollars earlier in the year to prepay and buy ahead some of the propane for the energy assistance. And their fiscal year begins October 1st, and it was kind of difficult. But any progress made in that area as far as getting some of these federal dollars to the states earlier so we can pre-buy when propane is usually cheaper?
I think the commissioner can elaborate on that, or if Representative Baker wants to talk about it after him. But Commissioner Rothman?
I'm happy to... Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to defer to Representative Baker. We've worked on it. One of the biggest concerns out of the propane crisis of 2013 was 2013-2014 winter was making sure that the propane tanks were not dropping below 10%, for example. That would be your ultimately bad place, 20%, 30%. You should be hovering around 50 and trying to keep them up there. So what we worked on with the legislature was an attempt to try to make sure that we could pre-fund and work with the petroleum propane industry, to allow for contracting early in the summer, purchase summer when prices are lower, prior to say the October harvest time, and fill those tanks at the cheaper price. One of the difficulties is the disconnect between the federal dollar funding that happens in roughly the end of October time frame. The program, say it, put it this way, the program opens up in the October time frame, so it starts to renew then. We get federal funding dollars sometimes announced in December usually. So you see if there's a disconnect between the summer propane dollars for the winter season when we're getting the low-income heating assistance program for that. So we needed to work with the federal government to try to or get approval to do that, and it was difficult to do that. In fact, it was we got an answer that it was not possible to preload those federal dollars into the summer months. Now, one way to solve that would be to obtain. We looked into this, too, would be to obtain state funding. Let's say just pick a general fund appropriation of a certain dollar to cover and then to pay for that expenditure once we got the federal dollars back in December. So we try to look at ways to do that, but it hasn't panned out as we were trying to envision because of the difficulties to get it administered. That said, we've been monitoring very closely our propane supply, and since that last bad winter supply, Minnesota has been in a much better shape for its propane. We keep a very close monitor on it. I watch it weekly, and then we'll monitor the national supply, the regional supply, and then the Minnesota supply to make sure that we're not dipping below an inappropriate level.
Representative Baker, do you want to add anything to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again,
It was a good bill that we had worked on and gotten through. I did get a letter from the commissioner stating that there was some issues with the Department of Energy not being able to kind of confirm the release of those, but there is precedent with other states. And I think that's the one thing that we have, I think we still need to kind of commit to working on that in the future to find the way the other states are getting that, and we need to figure that out as well. So great question, Representative Anderson. Thanks for bringing this up, and I want to continue to work on that. And I don't know if the commissioner thinks that if we need to work on this further, if we need further legislation on this, if it's in place, but we'd like to continue that dialogue. But it is happening with other states, and I think we should make sure that we're teed up for this as well. So thank you.
Commissioner, do you remember, so we did this, right?
Mm-hmm.
We passed this, we would front-load the general fund money and then pay it back with the federals, and I remember getting a letter, but I don't remember what the problem was. It was, Commissioner, do you remember?
Mr. Chair and Representative Baker, it was a little snippet of what I was just explaining. We tried to get it to work with the DOE, but it didn't. We ran into snags and roadblocks in terms of getting the approval to get the federal dollars released in time and in time to cover the flow of the dollars.
Christian, my recollection was that there was the timing issue was taken care of by the general fund expenditures. So if we got the money in December or even January, February, or March, that was going to backfill the general fund money, so that wasn't time sensitive. I know you sent me a memo on it. I just can't remember what it was. If you don't remember what it was either, that's fine. Because the timing wouldn't have been the problem, because we'd already paid it.
Mr. Chair, a couple things. First of all, I'm committed to continuing to work this up. Two, let's pull up the memo. But three, it was really the Department of Energy that ran into a snag with trying to get it to work out for us. I mean, we had that intent, and we worked on what we thought would be a good solution. One of the models was Wisconsin and some others. So it, but again, I'm happy to work on it and try to get to a spot where it works for everybody.
If you would you mind just sending the memo to the committee legislative assistant or have your staff do it, and then that way I can refresh my recollection. I do remember you sent it to me. I just don't remember what it said. So.
Yeah.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We get so many members that cycle through this committee. I'm not sure why they, come and go so quickly on this committee, and you get new members on your committee on a regular basis. We won't go there.
I'm not new.
But if my memory serves me right, we spent a significant amount of time. We went out to Wilmer. We did all sorts of things, and one of the things that was one of the pieces that was brought up is that was not the first time we were trying it. It is the second time. It didn't work the second time, but we had to raid the money from a particular legislator's pet project to make it work. And again, it didn't work the second time we tried it, and that pet project is now gone. But just so long as some days we should always listen to members who have been around a little longer.
Well, I'm trying to. It's not my recollection on it, but maybe I'm misremembering because I didn't remember the.
$185,000 was taken out of a solar thermal project.
Oh yes, now I remember. Okay, that was part of it. That was a small portion of it. So, Representative Anderson, did you have a follow up or not? Okay, Representative Neuberger. That was a long time ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioner. I just. Would like you to take this apart a little bit for me as I look at the numbers. You have $228 million here from the federal program funds, and as you were describing this to me, how much of this money? Because it goes to you, and then it goes to all the different organizations or agencies that help us distribute this assistance. From the beginning of when you get the funds till the money actually ends up into the hands of the citizens who need the help, what percentage of this, if you just give me a ballpark figure if you have to, but what percentage of this would be consumed by administrative costs?
Commissioner Rothman,
Mr. Chair, Representative, there's within the regulations up to 10%. Is for administration.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you said up to 10%, so Is that what the Department of Commerce and the agencies are doing? Are they taking their full 10%, or how does that work?
Commissioner Rothman, my recollection is, my recollection on this, and it's obviously off today, is that the C caps, the caps have their own, it's like a 4%. Is that what it is, Commissioner?
Okay, so it's, think of it this way. The 10% that I mentioned is a combined number for energy assistance and weatherization. Of that, 2% is state, 8% is CAP, Community Action Partnership Agency Administration.
Now, I do remember this. Remember what happened when somebody tried to reduce the administrative costs for the local level? Someone amended the bill? And they knocked it down. Does anyone remember trivia?
I don't remember that, Mr.
The Senate reduced it when Representative Radenovich had a bill. It was the Emergency Propane Act. And in the Senate, they took the percentage and knocked it down below that because they wanted to deliver more money and assistance than administrative costs. But the problem was some of the caps then didn't have the resources to actually administer the resources. So.
Yeah, now I do remember that. That was during the propane crisis, and we were trying to get dollars efficiently out, and then... Yeah.
It was like 2014, if I remember.
Yeah.
Boy, what Legislative Amnesia Day, huh? This is great.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions? Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, looking at the pie charts, with the revenue of special revenue of the $91,375,000 and then the expenditures of $70,815,000, I'm wondering, should they balance or how does that work?
Commissioner Rothman.
Can you restate your question? You're looking at slide 4, the 91.3, right?
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, yes. Looking at page 4, the special revenue comes in at $91,375, and that's, you said, the insurance fraud, the auto theft, so forth. And then when you look at page 6, the special revenue expenditures are $70,815,000. So, you know, it's $20 million of difference there. I'm just curious how that works or, you know, why that would be different if it's coming in and going out for special purposes like that.
Yeah.
Commissioner Rothman.
Yeah, let me just check with staff. Mr. Chair, Representative, we'll check on that. I'm asking my chief fiscal officer to check.
Any legislative assistant, you got that on the list? Any other questions for the commissioner, Representative Vogel?
No, not at this point.
All right, commissioner, please continue.
All right, so then let's turn to, I think I've covered everything I wanted to talk about on page 7, slide 7. So turning to slide 8, I'll do this in clockwise fashion as well, starting in the upper right. Now, to orient you, this is the FY16-17 general fund appropriations. So going back, think again of the amount that the department gets from the general fund appropriations, and these are our appropriations slash expenditures. And now, in the financial institutions area division, you see the dollar figures there. This is about the primary goal is to make sure that Minnesota has good banks, good credit unions, good lenders, good financial institutions to help Minnesota throughout greater Minnesota and around our communities and metro area as well to prosper and have the trust in their institutions. In communities, so for example, in communities throughout Minnesota, we have about 165 banks in Main Street, Minnesota, Greater Minnesota, of the total 250 that we have. Our financial institutions division staff primarily focus on solvency, safety, and soundness of the financial institutions throughout Minnesota. Next is our enforcement division. Think of all of the consumers and our constituents who need help or assistance with an insurance matter, real estate matter, securities matter. This division looks into that. And again, these are biennium dollars. the focus of these dollars help support the, our key investigations on behalf of consumers, and then you know, all the activity that we do in that, that space. Turning to the next pie chart, we have the insurance division. The this area of the economy in Minnesota is essentially, and what we oversee is about $258 billion in insurance company assets that are, you know, providing and supporting all the insurance that we buy and purchase and rely on in Minnesota. Our goal is to maintain a strong insurance sector, and this is all insurance sectors. So it's our personal lines, our property, our commercial lines, everything from life insurance and to our business insurance around the state of Minnesota. And fundamentally, our primary function is to make sure that we have safe and sound insurance institutions that will support their promises to our Minnesotans. As we turn to the next slide, piece of the pie, the division of administration within the department, it's a little bit, the name itself is historical. It's broader than just administration. Currently, this division houses our licensing staff, so all of the 320,000 licensing professionals in Minnesota or so, roughly. It also has our consumer services center staff, the unclaimed property services staff, and then the staff that does core services, everything from human services, financial management, you name it. It's every, to the front desk, to the mailroom. That's what this is, providing support to the department. And, you know, historically going back, the department is comprised of several state agencies that were merged together. So that included the Department of Public Service. Before that, there was the Department of Banking, Department of Insurance, Department of Securities. There was even a Consumer Affairs. And then way, way back, it was the Weights and Measures Unit. But over time, the goal was to bring all of these sort of regulatory functions together. And in that way, what we do with the core services is to be as efficient as possible to provide the support necessary for all of those divisions, which in many states are actually separate state agencies. And then next we have the energy division. This is what you think of in terms of what the department does for energy regulation. Fundamentally, this is we're focused on making sure that we have the electricity and natural gas utility oversight. We work in a way with the Public Utilities Commission, which you know is the deciding body, but a lot of the function, a lot of the staff support, the actual analytic work is done by the Department of Commerce staff primarily, and we do have a separate function, which is to speak on behalf of the public, speak on behalf of ratepayers, advocating for low rates and to make sure that we have reliable energy for all of Minnesota throughout our economy. So those are the big buckets, the primary buckets, and then delve down into what each of those divisions do within the buckets that budget folks and you keep track of in terms of our budget items. Then finally, I thought it'd be helpful just to give you what we do for Minnesota in a 2016 snapshot, meaning, you know, if you're Minnesotan, well, what does the Department of Commerce do? So we oversee, again, $55 billion of bank and credit union assets to make sure that they're safe and sound in our financial institutions. We also oversee $8.9 billion worth of transactions, which are assets under management of the securities industry that are in Minnesota or flowing through Minnesota. We have over, again, 350,000 businesses and individuals, professionals who are licensed by the department. Back to sort of the energy side, just alone in 2016, comparing what was proposed or requested in terms of utility you know, dollars or utility expenditures. The department proposed savings and obtained savings for Minnesota ratepayers of nearly $1 billion or $900 million. On the unclaimed property unit, the unclaimed property division, now this is missing money. This is the money that it could be a missing life insurance policy, a parent or you know, a beneficiary or a spouse never knew they had. It could be a lost stock. It can be an old utility bill that you forgot about. But Minnesotans, last year we helped Minnesotans obtain $49.3 million of unclaimed property returned to them, returned to actually 30,412 Minnesotans. It was the biggest year yet in terms of how much money was returned to the biggest number of people in the state of in the history of the program. We also have a for the consumer services that we do, 63,424 consumer service complaints, calls, inquiries that we handle in 2016. And then our for the gas pumps that we go, you go to all these, everywhere you see there'll be a sticker for the department. We also, if you go into the grocery stores, you'll see that we calibrate the scales, make sure that neither the consumer nor the business side is being cheated in a way, and that it's equitable and fair. So we inspected over 100,000 devices in 2016. And then if you saw this, we featured and highlighted a crackdown on criminals who were slipping in skimmers into all the pumps, or not all the pumps, but many pumps, gas pumps, in our gas stations in Minnesota. And so to do that, we launched a sweep and looked at 11,643 gas pumps inspected to pull out and root out any of those devices that the criminals have been putting into. And that's an ongoing investigation in the work that we're doing. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I'm open for questions. It's a very, again, big highlight, high overview, some of the key things and bigger budget items in our base budget for you.
Any other questions for the Commissioner? Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, looking at the general fund appropriations, because I think some of these entities, I know the banks, the financial institutions pay in an annual administrative fee, and then they also pay when they're examined. It looks like, is there like $9,733,000 coming in from the general fund to that department in excess of all of those collections of administration fees and also charges?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Representative, are you on slide 8?
I'm on slide 8, yes.
Yeah. So slide 8, if you will, again, that's for 2 years. It's the entire financial entire financial institutions division, which includes banks, credit unions, and non-depository institutions. And those are mortgage originators, mortgage servicers, their personal finance lenders, and a variety of other folks. That number represents the expenditures, just the expenditure side, that the department gets from the appropriations in staffing and the work that we do.
Representative
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, but what I'm wondering is there's also assessments made to those individual institutions, plus when there's an exam done, they get, in some cases I'm aware of, a fairly healthy bill. Is that in the $9,000,007, or is there additional money coming in over the $9,000,007?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it's a variety. If you'd have to go back to the revenue sources. And so, for example, on the banking side, just to give you a flavor of this, the bank revenue is assessed out, as you indicated. It's an assessment. And there's a statutory cap in place at about 103%. So we cannot assess over 103%. And then the bank assessments go to the general fund, directly into the general fund. And then through your work and appropriation work, decide how much of that gets to be appropriated to the department and then expended. You know, in the non-depository side, we can follow up and give you more detail. Some of the non-depository side, so I'm thinking of mortgage originators, when we do an exam, there's an exam fee. It's a different way of funding for the work that's over there. Again, all intended to go to the general fund, and then we appropriate it out. It's appropriated out back to the agency.
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair, so Commissioner, then when that assessment, or not assessment, but the billing is made for the time that was spent in each individual institution, that flows as well into the general fund. So what I guess my question is, does the $9,733,000 reflect all of the money that comes in from any source because it's flowing through the general fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't want to get revenues versus expenditures mixed up.
Okay.
So the revenues in the financial institution side is a mixture of assessments for some and fee and licensing revenue for others. TIP generally, it's a general proposition, that revenue is deposited into the general fund. Then, in terms of our biennial budget, the department's biennial budget, we're allocated, appropriated a certain funding to pay for our staff and our costs, which is an appropriation. You know, it's not directly flowing through.
So, just one more follow-up, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. So, is that tracked? And what I'm getting at, I guess, as I looked at this, is that money that is being paid in by any of those financial institutions or mortgage companies or whatever, is that tracked so that none of the assessment that they're paying or the exam fees that they're paying would be used for other than the direct cost of what they're actually making for the department?
Mr. Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it's an excellent question. you know, I can go offline with you a little bit on that. Historically, the way the department has the revenue sources have been established as I described, and then and that money is deposited into the general fund. How closely it's matched, I can have my staff show to you. But at the end of the day, let me just wrap up my thought on that is, I too want to make sure that the financial institutions, the ones that are doing, you know, are good for doing good things for Minnesota, have the appropriate staff, good staff, to match their services. The service should be matched as close as possible to what those institutions are paying for, in essence. And I think, and I've looked at that. I have some thoughts and suggestions on how better to do that. And one way to do that is to, we'll roll it out and have those conversations, I guess, as we go forward. But it's a good question.
So the Department of Commerce makes money for the general fund. You take in more than you expend.
Mr. Chair, it's been that way for
like 20 years, right?
Mr. Chair, it's been a net revenue generator for at least 20 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been an easier answer.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yes, we're a net revenue generator.
Representative May Quaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Rothman, I was wondering what role the Department of Commerce plays in addressing the lending disparities that exist in Minnesota and kind of how you've addressed that, if you guys do have a role in doing so.
Commissioner Rothman, in which division would that be under?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we do, and it would be a combination. So, and not to, you know, just to sort of clarify the question, there, you know, if we find a lending disparity, so for example, you know, it could come up in an examination. It could be something that the examiners in the financial institutions division, Mr. Chair, or it could be a complaint for something that we would investigate in terms of a complaint by an individual in terms of the, you know, some sort of disparity. And if it's a complaint, it would come through our our enforcement division, and we would look at that. But we're always on the lookout for any complaints or concerns about lending disparities, and to the extent we can, we will you know, work on them. I don't know if you have a specific one in mind, but I'm happy to follow up or to work with you on it.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's more the disparities as they exist and maybe even understanding how we're going to address it, because so often if you're the one being lent or not lent money or at whatever rate it is, how would you know if it's unfair, right? It's kind of personal. And so just looking at the mission statement of securing Minnesota's economic future, if any of the disparities that we have continue to exist, particularly when it comes to banking lending, you know, the kinds of things that we see in this committee, I guess I would want to see like a bigger strategy instead of just complaint by complaint. Are there institutions that do this on the whole? Is it rampant across one industry, so on and so forth?
So, Mr. Chair and Representative, since I started, one of my top priorities is to educate and to help Minnesotans understand how they can achieve personal finance success. And part of that is to understand the traps and scams and frauds, including lending traps and frauds and scams. Within that bucket, and so what we've done is we have a lot of outreach. I go out, my staff goes out, we do trainings on that. We work with a variety of communities throughout the state of Minnesota, particularly some low-income folks and those that need you know, additional assistance. So we have a broader strategy in terms of that. We also partner with you know, community organizations, nonprofits, have those conversations with people. And you know, what I say and what our staff does and trains on that is to make sure that we're not just waiting for the next complaint to come in. We're actually helping Minnesotans understand from kindergarten all the way through retirement, kindergarten, student debt, working family debt issues, home mortgage opportunities. We work with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency on education and training for many people so that they can understand what a mortgage is, how to pay a mortgage and keep track of all that. Unbanked populations are very important. We work through, we have an entire, every time, or for every year I've been here, we've had April set aside as Financial Literacy Month. So we do 4 weeks of a variety of programs throughout the state of Minnesota, partnering with, so for example, University of Minnesota, Extension Services, the FAME program. I can name a ton of them off the top of my head. FAME program, Northfield, and a variety around the state, including, I also want to say we have a proud relationship with the credit unions, with the state banks. They have their own programs to help and to work on financial literacy. Good example of that is with some of the credit unions, we've partnered up and done elementary school training on financial literacy. And that includes not just only going into first grade classes through sixth grade classes. We've done it at the higher levels. We're doing it with high school programs. And then getting into, creative ways to get it out there. So we do a lot of it, and we can show you a lot that we do, not just to look after an investigation or complaint, but to be proactive. And it's a very important part of my legacy and what I want to leave for the department.
Representative Baker, the broadband maker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Couple questions, I guess. One would be a statement. I've been working a little bit over the summer with Mr. Grant in your department, working on a SIP enhancement and sort of a redo. For some of the new members, the SIP program is a conservation improvement plan that was established about 25 years ago. A good program that really helped folks look at energy-efficient refrigerators, appliances, also some interrupters on your air conditioner when the peak is really in demand. And I think if you all look at your own homes and businesses, you can see how the efficiencies have taken over with LED lighting and such. And so I think there's a lot of successes in that program, and I want to try to bring some things this year forward to update that with our friends in the green energy side of things and the munis and the co-ops. I think there's some real good things to work on, so look forward to that with Mr. Grant. Also, is it fair to say, switching subjects here, is it fair to say that you get to the gas pumps once a year when it comes to analyzing their measurements and proper dispensing of the units? Is that a once-a-year ideal?
Mr. Chair and Representative, what we do is there's a general requirement that we try to get to, and in some areas we can get to it a little bit more frequently than others, but our average, so some it could be a little more, a little less, is right in the 18-month range. So we can get to some a little quicker and some a little less, but
okay.
Our goal is to get to as many as we can as fast as possible. Really? And, you know, we could always use a little more staff. That might help, too.
Thank you. And I guess one of the Mr. Chair, one of the things some of us are working on is to try to alert consumers of what they're currently paying on a fuel tax. So putting a sticker alongside of your measurement sticker would be maybe an idea to have, and then just to let people know what federal and state taxes are adding up to. That does go towards roads and bridges and such is something that some of us are visiting about to see how often that would be updated is helpful for me. So that's all. Thank you.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just curious, I was looking at the employee roster, and I noticed, like, between 2000 and, from 2012 on, under insurance you had no employees, and then you had, I guess, you're up to 33.1 now. And does Minsure fall under this? No, Minsure's something different. I'm wondering why all of a sudden there's, you know, historically there have been zero employees, and then all of a sudden there's...
Commissioner, what happened in fiscal year 12?
Mr. Chair, when I started in 2011, and having the insurance background, I felt it was important to reorganize the department a little bit. It did not have an insurance division, and since many states have an agency, I created a division of insurance. And some of that staff came from the financial institute. They were separated. There's some that were under the deputy of banking and some that were under the deputy of enforcement, so I brought them under one. And so that's part of the answer, Mr. Chair and Representative Scott. The other part of the answer is that, yes, for FY12, you see that 8.5 and FY13, the 21.1. For that small period of time, I don't know how best to say this, but prior to the passage of the state law for Minsure, the administration had some staffing for that, and that is Minsure staff. For that's FY12 and 13.
Representative Scott?
Thank you. And just for clarification, so is Minsure its own, I think it is its own standalone agency. It doesn't fall on, but when we hear from folks about Minsure, we often hear from the Department of Commerce. Am I right? Because isn't that?
Mr. Rothman, what is Minsure?
I remember correctly, we may have had this discussion on the when it was being passed as to what exactly it was. But
Mr. Chair, I'll be as brief as I can be. Minsure is separate than the Department of Commerce. It's a separate quasi-state agency. It's got its own board, and it's separate and apart from that. Fundamentally, the way it works is that the Department of Commerce oversees the insurance sector, all of the insurance sector. So the health insurance plans, the health brokers, and all of that. And in a way, one of the participants is Minsure. It's just an exchange. Public exchange. So the products need to be approved by the department before they can be sold, either inside or outside of Minsure. But fundamentally, they're separate. It's a totally separate entity from the Department of Commerce.
Thank you for refreshing my memory on that. Yeah. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You. Commissioners, thank you for your testimony. And then I do have one request, is that thank you for the count on FTE. Would there be a way that we can get this data shown by revenue source? So, for example, unless this is not, is this the list of just the general fund FTEs?
Mr. Chair, this is everything. I think, I'll take your question under advisement and see if it's possible. I don't know if it's possible. We don't track it that way. We wouldn't normally track these FTEs by the revenue sources.
We could track the percentage of the revenue it's assigned to each activity, though, couldn't we? So how much of financial institutions' revenue is from the general fund versus non-general fund? Same thing with energy resources.
Mr. Chair, I'll take it home as a homework assignment. I don't think we're able to do it, but we'll see what we can do.
Okay, thank you very much,
and
appreciate you coming in.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Phillips, come on up. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Jim.
Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And members, we're going to let the commissioner present here for a little bit. We'll take your questions as they come. Commissioner?
Thank you.
The floor is yours.
For the record, I'm Mark Phillips. I'm the commissioner of the Department of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board.
Commissioner, can you get a little closer to the microphone?
Thank you.
Thank
yes,
you.
You're welcome.
You're soft-spoken, which is sometimes a good thing.
I've never been called soft-spoken, so I appreciate that. So I would give a brief overview of the department, a little bit of what our strategies are and everything. We have some financial information on the end that might shed some light on some of the questions the committee asked for. So our agency is about going on 76 years old. We celebrated our diamond anniversary last year, and was formed in 1941 by the legislature and then Governor Harold Stassen. We are one of the only state agencies that offers in a operates in a smaller geographic area, so we're not statewide. So we're a part of northeastern Minnesota. Our boundaries are by school districts that had one time had mineral evaluation, or there were some other criteria used, power plants that serviced the mining industry. We operate with taconite production taxes, and our mission is to promote and invest in business, community, and workforce development for the betterment of northeastern Minnesota. I'm going to go through some strategies, and then I'm going to get into the numbers on the taconite production taxes. But so we don't get general fund revenue at our agency, so all our funding is dedicated, so we don't bring our budget back to the legislature for approval. Our budget's controlled, basically, and you'll see later how we're controlled by taconite revenues and taconite production. We've done some strategic planning the last couple of years under my leadership, and I'm going to go through a couple of the strategies and some things that are going on with them. So our first strategy is invest in growing businesses that create jobs. So we are very active in business retention and expansion. We do some business recruitment in targeted industries. Some of the examples I pointed out on the screen, I won't read them all, but to give you an idea of the kind of things we do in manufacturing, and we have quite an industry and customer service up in our region with Blue Cross and Delta Airlines and others. We also, our strategy too, is to prepare communities for change and growth. Try to prioritize projects that promote public infrastructure tied directly to business development and consolidation of public services. Our programs are involved in development infrastructure, commercial and residential redevelopment, where we see an increase in tax base for our local communities, We have a business energy retrofit program, culture and tourism, and we're recently piloting a downtown and business corridor redevelopment program. And I'll give you an example of some of the things. So our Central Iron Range Sanitary District is an example of our consolidation of public services. It was a multiple community wastewater treatment plant. We support our Range Regional Airport, and we have some industrial development around our mining industry. Joy Global is one of the largest vendors for our mining industry in northeastern Minnesota. Our strategy three is to invest in an educated workforce. So we provide grants for innovative education and workforce development initiatives in order to attract and retain workers. So we have three funds. We have a workforce development grant program. We have the Iron Range Higher Education account, and we have the Iron Range School Collaboration Grant Program. We do most of our work partnering with the Northeast Higher Education District. These are the Minnesota, now I used to say MINSCU for all these years. I have to remember to say Minnesota State. So we have a number of campuses, Itasca, Hibbing, Mesaba Range, Vermilion, and Rainy River that are in or serve our region with the Northeast Higher Education District. And most of our workforce development programs, we work in conjunction with NEHED. Some of our examples, we started an Iron Range engineering program. We don't have any four-year facilities on the Iron Range, but you can get a four-year engineering degree through the Iron Range engineering program. It's an applied learning program where our students work with local companies. We have the Iron Range Nursing Healthcare Simulation Center in Hibbing at Hibbing Community College, and we are starting a new process automation program over at Itasca Community College. Strategy four is to prepare for tomorrow's mining. So our programs in the mining and mineland reclamation area, we have a drilling incentive for exploration. We have a Laurentian Vision Partnership that works with the local units of government on how we might convert the post-mining times to how we can best utilize the land after the mining. We have a mining impact program, so we've participated recently on moving a road to allow one of our taconite companies to have more ore available. And then we have the Taconite Economic Development Fund. This is where we invest back with the companies to make sure they're keeping their plants in the most modern technology and things like that. So some of the examples of these I mentioned is the Hibbing Taconite Shoreland and Upland Development Program. We did a drilling and exploration program with Vermilion Gold with some success. North Shore Mining, a direct reduction grade pellet, so they're doing a value-added pellet that will go into direct reduction, and we help them with that. And then we just recently relocated a county road near Chisholm to allow Hibbing Taconite to access some more resources. So strategy five is develop a strategic plan for Giants Ridge Ski Area. So the agency operates a golf and ski resort in nearby Wabak, Minnesota. Recently was a part of a legislative audit review, and about the same time the review was going on, but they recommended as well, we did a very current economic impact of the facility. It's about $44 million economic impact. But we're now developing a long-term strategic plan that would consolidate our management. Right now we have about four different parts of the resort are managed under different management, some under the state, some under private, under contract. We're trying to consolidate all those. There's been recent investment in a new chalet building. That was part of that money came from part of the state legislature bonding and part from our agency, and we have recently authorized the purchase of two new high-speed lifts at Giants Ridge. We're trying to drive that economic impact number, obviously, up. Strategy number six is when I came on board in 2015, we had the majority of our taconite facilities were in shutdown mode, and there was a call for a job summit and how we could stimulate the economy in northeastern Minnesota. So we, instead of, I guess, having a big meeting, we had a series of focus groups. We did 100 private business leaders in our region by invitation came together. In another meeting, we had 100 community leaders, school district mayors, councilors, mostly elected officials. And then we had 100 tourism and arts and crafts and that kind of type of individuals. And then we capped that all that results, and we ran that what we learned from those 300, three different focus groups, we ran by a general public event. So we're taking this input, and then we've formed some longer-term strategic groups on each of these areas, and I won't read them all to you, but they involve large business attraction to small business, livable communities, tourism, natural resource-based issues. And they're working all the time, and we're trying to drive our budget process by what we're learning. So I don't know if you noticed on one of the earlier slides I mentioned we were piloting a downtown rehabilitation program. The idea for that came out of this effort. So talking about our revenues, so our budget is dependent on how the taconite production tax is being collected. And as you can see, even though it's based on three-year averaging, it's supposed to take some of the bumps out of the road. We're experiencing a downturn in revenues. So, and we, if you were going to project this out, I would say 2018 would be pretty flat from 17 because we're starting to see the taconites come back. Because the three-year averaging protects us on the downside, it also kind of harms us on the coming backside. So we are we're in the middle of some very lean times for the agency. The distribution of the tax. So as I mentioned earlier, the taconite production taxes are paid in lieu of local property taxes. So our taconite operations do not pay commercial industrial property taxes. They pay a production tax in lieu of that. So like most normal property taxes, they go to the local counties, cities and townships, and school districts. Because the tax is legislated rather than levied against budgets like other property taxes are, there are residuals. So there's a distribution to all the usual things you see on the right side of that chart. And then there are some pass-through, dedicated pass-through accounts, property tax relief, and then mining reinvestment. That's the money we reinvest back into the industry that provides us the revenue. And then it's what money that goes to the IRRRB. So out of the approximately $100 million worth of taxes, the IRRRB in round numbers is $35 million or so of that. So talking about how that is spent, I tried to, again, we don't operate on a biennial budget like the other departments. We operate on an annual budget because of annual production of the taconite. And our budget approved in May of every year by the IRRRB board, which is made up of elected senators and representatives that have the majority of their district in the taconite tax relief area. And then that budget is then finally approved by the governor. So this just gives you a sense of how much of it's passed through, that's the bottom part, how much is projects and programs, how much is development operations, how much is Giants Ridge, I'm sorry, I missed that one, what goes to Giants Ridge, and then what we roll over into the next year budget. So that's a rough idea of where we're at in looking forward in 18 and 19. So, I don't know, you want to hand that out? So, I discovered that this would probably be difficult to read. So, taconite production taxes are somewhat complicated. While are you being handed, I'll just give you a general sense.
I'll give it to the page.
So, the... those residuals I meant, so after the distributions of taconite taxes go to the counties, the school districts, and the communities, that residual that comes to the agency is split roughly two-thirds, one-third into the Taconite Environmental Protection Fund, and those are used primarily for grants to communities, and the word environmental protection in there. It's broader than that, but originally it was a lot. There was a lot of funding for clean water and wastewater investment in our area. The next fund is the they call it DJJ, Doug J. Johnson Fund, named after Senator Johnson when he retired, but it was originally called the Northeast Minnesota Economic Protection Fund. And this is the money we use to help businesses grow and thrive in our region. And then there's a small amount per ton that goes into our board account, and that's basically for administration and things like that. So you can see on this chart, we break it down by fund and then by program. So they're all listed there. All the ones that I showed you on the slides are listed all the way down our operations. So when I have a couple more slides, and when we're finished, I'd be happy to go through any of these numbers and answer any questions. Bob Scuffy. He's our accounting director of accounting at the agency, so if we have any technical things. I brought 2 years of that, 16 and 17. And then we were asked to provide FTEs back to 2008. As you can see, that's kind of a boring slide because we don't change very much. We haven't grown our complement. Occasionally, we've been adding positions, say, in development and maybe reducing positions in some of our administrative functions, trying to get more efficient in our cost of managing the agency. So we haven't had a lot of change in FTEs. So with that, if we want to have any questions on anything that I went over, but particularly on the numbers, I'd be happy to try to answer anything.
Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I mean no ill by this question, but I'm just curious to wonder the rationale back when the state got into golf courses and ski resorts up there at Giants Ridge. What's the background of that?
Well, that was about the time of just after the Reserve Mining Company bankruptcy and everything, and the eastern edge of the Iron Range was devastated. And if you read the enabling statute of the agency, it specifically states from 1941 that because it's an extractive industry, the money was set aside originally to develop the remaining resources to include but not be limited to tourism. So one of the few things that's specifically in our statute is to promote tourism. So the thought was that we had this enormous, and the statute is also very specific, is that when the commissioner deems there's been distress in a community, that authorizes the expenditure of funds. So we had extreme distress in the Eastern Iron Range at that time, and tourism was in our statute, and there was an operating entity that was a nonprofit that was struggling. Mm-hmm. So the thought was helping them. And over the years, and many of these years I haven't been involved with this, but over the years there's been continued investment because, frankly, the economic impact has been fairly high. So they continue to invest over the years, and now it's quite a... And Commissioner Gustafson was under Governor Carlson, built the two golf courses, for example. Under the Perpetuers, they built the ski operation. So it's been kind of a bipartisan effort, I guess, over the years, because it's had such a positive impact. There's been a major residential development that was developed during the Plenty years, I believe, across the lake from Giants Ridge, privately developed by Natera Land. So it's an economic machine in itself. It's becoming, and as I mentioned before, we're looking at so as it grew, the management was tacked on. So we have private people operating. We have the state operating the ski hill. We have a private contractor running the golf operations. And it's very inefficient. So when I got there, I said, I'm on the tail end of my career. I thought, if we're going to make some management changes, I'm probably the guy that should try to do it. And so we're trying to consolidated all under a private operator under some kind of lease or contract, and that would give the agency a lot more options to sit back as owner and maybe make some strategic infrastructure investments, but not have to maybe control the operational deficits we've had over the years. So,
Representative Anderson, is it?
Yeah.
Follow up, Commissioner, just very briefly here as we're listening to you answer Representative Anderson's question here. It sounds to me like a portion of your response is in response to the audit that was done recently. Would you just take a very brief, high-level overview to refresh the members that were here before and then to bring the new members up to speed?
Sure.
What was the highlights and lowlights, for that matter, of the audit?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to. So I don't have there were seven audit recommendations, and then there was an appendix. So I'll just touch on the seven. We're primarily monitoring, evaluation, I would call them, and compliance issues with quite a few of our programs. So we have addressed all of those. And, in fact, we're about 45 days away from sending kind of a annual review of everything we've done to comply. So some of it was, and I would say would be bookkeeping, record keeping. You know, somebody claims that they will do this, create so many jobs, and you go back and monitor. And then some of our, so we always monitored, but we would ask companies every year, how many jobs did you create? And they would provide that, and we'd keep that in the file. Well, the legislative auditor said, did you examine the payroll records? No, we didn't. So now we're adding that function. We also, for a number of compliance things they recommended, we're moving to an automated system for our grant operation. So our communities will apply online, and the system won't let you advance unless you're in complete compliance. So if we don't have a signed contract, there won't be any, and that means everybody signs off, Department of Administration, Attorney Generals, everything. And then if they submit an invoice, if anything hasn't been, the machine won't let you pay it. And so it's really been a, it's helped a lot of us. I think it's a efficiency thing. We took the legislative audit very seriously, and we really improved our operation significantly. We hired an outside consultant who's an expert in evaluating proposals, so we're doing a better job of evaluating our grant proposals and scoring them to make sure we're getting the most competitive ones. And then the economic impact study in Giants Ridge was one of the recommendations. And the last one we're working on right now is we had an antiquated loan management system. It was developed. I worked at the agencies back from 1983 through 1989, and it's the same system that we developed back then. So they asked us to update that, and we're in the process of actually picking a vendor right now, and that'll be kind of the final issue with the legislative audit. The appendix of the legislative audit had to do with something that really wasn't an agency issue. It was more of an issue for the legislature, and this is the issue of the board of IRRRB being elected officials of the legislature, but also having a certain level of power at the agency, and whether there was a constitutional issue there. So there was some legislation proposed last year to bring it back. So that situation was changed in 1995. So there was legislation that was in the tax bill that went unsigned that would have brought us back to the pre-95 levels. And then I would have, the commissioner would have the same kind of executive powers that the other commissioners and the other executive branch agencies do. Obviously, I supported that, but I think it had bipartisan support last session, so I'm hoping Representative Lehman has indicated to me that she's going to try to reintroduce that with maybe some additional reforms. So we're going to work with her and see if we can make that happen. And then if that happened, I think we would have done a very good job. Now, somebody said, boy, you had seven items on a legislative audit. The last time we had a program evaluation at IRRRB was when I worked there in 1985. So it's 30 years later. If I look at it, we really didn't do very badly if you look deep at the audits. So, but we're pretty proud that we're we feel we're in full compliance now.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Sundin.
Thank you for coming today, Commissioner Phillips. I was just looking at that first one of the first graphics you had up there that actually depicted the physical makeup of the IRRRB per school district, I guess it was.
Yes.
Yeah. How is that determined, and is that by constitution, or is that subject to change?
That was set up legislatively. So at the time, they used, for whatever reason, they used school district boundaries. Mm-hmm. And don't hold me exactly to this, but in essentially what it was, you had mineral valuation in that school district somewhere, anywhere. You had a power plant that served the mineral industry or a processing plant. So you wonder why you have the whole Arrowhead region. You're up to Grand Marais. Well, there's a big school district up there, and there's port facilities on Lake Superior down by Two Harbors, and that took the whole school district in.
Okay.
And there was a power plant at Taconite Harbor. You know, there's so, and that's why you see the Cuyuna Iron Range. So you have parts of Crow Wing and Aitken County. There were mineral evaluations and mining gone on in that area at one time. So the legislature set that up. So you asked me about modifying it. So there was a period of time, I want to say probably in the late 70s, that they set up a secondary Taconite tax relief area, and there's very small appropriations made to Kuchjin and Carleton counties. So we send, yes. Mm-hmm. It's in your handout. It's that supplemental tax. So if you look across the columns, there's board account, TDF, DJJ, and then subtax. So if you go down, the occupation for tax region 3 is $563,000. That's split between half and half between Carleton and Cochin County. So the legislature has weighed in occasionally, and my guess will be, if there's additional mining outside of this geography, there'll be some move afoot somewhere to change the boundaries. So you never know.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Meanwhile, what's the chances of getting those allocations for Carleton County and Cochin County increased?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I believe that is also legislated, so it's something that you'd have to take care of here.
We're going to. Looking to the future, there's another form of mining, coming to the forefront on the Iron Range. And what's the position of the IRRRB in promoting other forms of mining other than taconite?
Commissioner Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, well, we work with the Minnesota Geological Survey, the Natural Resource Research Institute, and the DNR Land and Minerals, and we attend the Prospectors and Developers Conference up in Canada every year, where we have a Minnesota presence to encourage mineral exploration in Minnesota. We have a drilling incentive program. We've loaned money to, we help start and finance Mesaba Nuggets. We had at one time a loan with ESSER. We had a loan with Polymet. So we, you know, mining and minerals are our game. I like to say, so because there's been a lot of controversy over the environment, I like to say our agency is promoting environmentally compliant mining. So we're not trying to, promote just mining without any environmental review.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. It's been a pleasure visiting with you, and I guess I've got a couple of questions on a couple of different things. I'm very encouraged by your support for reform, and I'm looking forward to working together with you on that. We'd really like to see something that really serves the agency and the region into the future. And so I would encourage you, as we talk about some of these maybe antiquated pieces that might still be in state statute that are troublesome or maybe not relevant anymore, to take a look at that and give us some recommendations for change. But you also indicated that you're looking more to really focus on economic development, even with your public works programs, to make sure you have economic outcomes, and with your Recharge the Range and engaging people all across the region. Full disclosure here, I used to be at the agency, and we had something called a balanced scorecard, where we measured activity and outcomes and so on. I'm just wondering, do you have something similar? Are you? I'd be really interested, and I think probably the legislature would be interested in hearing some of the outcomes of your activity.
Well, that's Mr. Chairman, Representative Lindman, that was precisely. I'm not sure if we use the same naming of the thing, but that's what we worked with Michael Porter, was his name? Michael Patton is our consultant on evaluation of how we score the projects on outcomes. So, I look at, so our industrial and residential redevelopment, what are the outcomes that are increasing the tax base? Otherwise, we just don't tear down buildings for no purposes, things like that. Our loan program, we try to make sure that we're having a reasonable amount of job creation or job retention in order for our investment. So, again, we don't, there's not a hard number like $10,000 a job, but we also aren't going to have $1 million for one job. So it has to be some reasonable test on things like that. So we are very concerned about outcomes. But, Mr. Chairman, if I might, so your first comment about steering the agency into grant programs to communities that affect development. So when I wasn't, I left the agency this little time in the 80s, and then now, I still spent the rest of my career, so almost 35 years now, in economic development in the private sector and nonprofit sector. And over all those years, the number one driving factor for economic development is quality of life. People put businesses where they want to live. I'm trying to prepare our communities to be a very desirable place to live so that people will start businesses and grow businesses there. So when I look at just doing public infrastructure funding for wastewater and clean water, that wasn't getting us there. When I drove around the Iron Range when I came back home again, I looked around and it just did not look like the kind of desirable place that I would start a business in. So I'm trying to turn this big ship away from a little bit of that infrastructure only. So what are we doing about creating a high quality of life?
Representative Looney, follow up.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm really encouraged to hear that, and I think what the agency has maybe lacked in the past, and it's partly due to the structure, is a clear vision for what we want to impact and how we want to impact. So I would just encourage you, Commissioner, to continue to focus on economic outcomes. The region tends to continue to lag behind the rest of the state, and it really suffers in the downturn of the mining, you know. And so economic diversification, we want to support mining, we want to support new mining, but economic diversification is going to get us to a point where we're not that lagging region in the state. And so I'm really encouraged, and I think that we can help you get there. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President Lehman, thank you very much.
Follow-up questions, Representative Lehman. You done?
No. Right. Chair, thank you.
Representative Mifflin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner and staff, for coming down and preparing all this for us. I know last year going through the audit, it was kind of rough going through committees. Tensions were high, and I feel like, you know, we're to a point now where it's kind of the water's not churning anymore, and it feels good to actually be having a conversation about being productive and the changes we need to make. And I hope I can join you, Representative Lehman, in reintroducing House File 3850 from last year and getting some of those constitutional things addressed, many of the things I didn't know as a board member, having been on there 4 years, simply because no one ever asked about it. And it was pretty common sense that if something's not constitutional, that we make sure the changes are in there. So thank you all for this presentation and the work you've done to address those issues over the last few months here. And Commissioner Phillips, I would concur, seven items that were highlighted, you know, many other small things in the report, but seven kind of major points isn't too bad over the years. And in fact, you know, one of the other things I learned as sitting on this committee for the entire time I've been in the legislature now is we did have a pretty darn good track record in terms of the success of our grants and loans in comparison to the failures that have happened with other state investments. And I think, in fact, it was, you know, better than what Deed had done itself as a whole in Minnesota, pretty equivalent. And so I kind of wanted to point out a few of the highlights in my mind of the audit, which was I learned as a board member that, you know, we need to embrace these changes and shift trajectories a little bit to, you know, make the agency run a little better. However, one thing I want to be very, very, very clear to the members on this committee and at the Capitol in general with is we are the only state agency, the only one that doesn't get a penny of general fund money to run itself. This is, as Commissioner Phillips stated and former Commissioner, now Representative Lehman well knows, all local property tax dollars. And so, you know, when we're talking about things going here and there or spending differently, keep in mind that this would mostly be like a county budget or a city budget. And so changes that we make here have dire effects on the communities there. You know, a simple change in a penny, as Joel Michael will tell you in taxes, isn't as simple as it seems. So in talking about school funding, Representative Sundin, I think we can have some conversations. In fact, Representative Eklund is, and Baker, seeing as you all graduated from the same class, I feel like I'm getting triple teamed here. I think he went out to stepped out for a different meeting. But no, it's something we do need to talk about is production. Comes into other areas, and especially with copper nickel coming in, we're going to have an opportunity to hopefully, you know, fix things and do them right the first time so someone 30 years from now can go back and adjust our small mistakes now and make it a little better then. Let me just look through my notes here 1 second. So the other thing was, you know, a question about Giants Ridge, and I know that that did spur from many different governors and commissioners work together, and just want members to keep in mind, too, like, I don't think it's any board member's idea that we go build a competing ski resort or golf course. It's accumulated over many years. There's a lot of employees out there, both public and private, and what we need to do there, too, is kind of bummed Representative Anderson also had to step out to ask the question. That needs to be dealt with in a careful way, too. We can't just shut it down. That impact for the community, the $42 million, we know that it's going to mom-and-pop businesses. If you're stopping up skiing, chances are you're grabbing a bite to eat, staying at a hotel, many of which, you know, get their repairs done by hardworking building trades folks. Our local communities really need that on the East Range right now. And hopefully with PolyMet coming online, we'll all be able to get a little boost. But those communities really need that income. And it's a lot like a municipal golf course or any other county-run golf course. So just keep that in mind as we're going. With that, I guess I'll close my remarks for today and just say, again, thank you for the presentation. I look forward to working on the committee to finish some of that unfinished work for definitely addressing the constitutionality issues from last year.
Thank you, Representative Metza. Any further questions from the committee? With that, Representative and Chair Garofalo, final word.
Yep, thank you. And Commissioner, my apologies for not being around for some of this today. Lots going on, as you understand, but I just wanted to thank you for the work you're doing. Looking forward to working with you as well as the range delegation on economic development issues. Obviously, there's a lot of cool things that are coming down the pike, and I think, obviously, the opportunities that are presented to us with precious metal mining, exactly what Representative Metz has said, we want to make sure we do this right, particularly in terms of a lot of our statues designed around taconite. You know, they don't really correlate well into the precious metals arena, but you've got a friend in the legislature, and we definitely want to partner with you guys, and we'll see where things go. But obviously, lots of opportunities, especially with the new administration in Washington. A lot of red tape and a lot of barriers are going to get out of the way, and just anything we can do to help out, please let us know. But I do look forward to working with you as well as the delegation on diversification of economic issues up north.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, just to close that out, I really appreciate it. We had a lot of bipartisan support last year. We had there's some legislation floating around that we didn't appreciate. But all in all, we were working on the big Louisiana Pacific project, working on those kinds of issues, this legislative fix. We had really a lot of good bipartisan support, so I'm looking forward to that again this year. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And with that, members, we are adjourned.